Hi, and welcome to the Making Our Way podcast. This week, our guest is Ashley from Shallow Creek Woodcraft as we go into a few of her recent projects and her development as a woodworker. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, good to see you this week.
My man.
What are you guys about to?
Let me go first because I took PTO at the end of last week. We recorded last Tuesday, right? Tuesday or Thursday?
I don't remember.
Thursday because I got drunk and then I didn't go to work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. And let me tell you, the key is that Monday. Like you could do the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but what happens is Sunday is terrible because you're just wasting it knowing you have to go to work on a Monday. Yep. Taking that Monday off makes Sunday a full day of celebration and then Monday a full day of watching TV. So it's fucking awesome. And I knocked out so much stuff. I didn't get anything done on my car like I wanted to because I went to the tire place, dropped off my rims. The tires were supposed to come in on Thursday. So part of it was I wanted to take the wheels off so I could do brakes and all this other stuff. And they called me and were like, Mr. DePlanis, the wheels you ordered were discontinued 3 years ago. Or the tires. And I'm like, well, why are they on your website? You know, like I didn't make this up. I picked these from your website. And so I had to order a new set of tires. They didn't come in until Monday. And so I didn't mess with the car because I wanted to do all that at the same time. But what I did finish is my Making Our Way ornament swap item is about 90% nice. Done.
Nice.
The rulers, I've taken a giant leap forward in the rulers. I'll talk about that a little more in a second. I cleaned the shit out of my shop, which was beyond needed to happen. And I made a table for on the 11th. I'm going to it's a really cool artist charity down in Galveston. Galveston is the island south of Houston. And this charity, what they do is they buy marshland so that developers can't buy it. And they preserve it. And they call it the artist boat. So it's supposed to, like, they have kayak tours and people go and they paint the sceneries and stuff like that. That's what the territory. And so they raise money through dinners and auction items. And so I made a table to auction for the charity and I'm going to go to the dinner next Saturday on the 11th and bring the table down there. So I had a pretty full weekend.
That's cool.
I like it.
The Friday, well, go ahead, Austin.
I was going to say, are you making rules or rulers?
Rules.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
So what I'm doing is making rulers and turning them into rules because this last shipment, okay, let me tell you the saga of my shipment. I tell you what, I'll talk less during the interview because I'm going to talk more right now. The saga of Dean and the rules. So my last order from Online Metals was for 10 brass pieces of stock and 5 copper pieces of stock. And I was going to do 15 more rules. That was going to give me 20. I'm hoping to eventually reach 3,000 followers and then I'm going to give one away and put the rest up for sale. I'm still not at 3,000 followers. So I get the first batch of rules I've done and I've got some ready to ship to some friends, you know, just, hey, test it out. Let me know how it holds up. But I noticed in like the 2 to 3 inch range, there's kind of this wave and I'm like, the stock maybe isn't flat or there's something going on. I don't know what it is. Well, I found out what it was. I struggled mightily and I talked on this podcast about it. I know it's not skill, but getting the dimensions exactly right. Cause a ruler needs to be accurate, right?
Right. Yes.
So when you put a lens on a laser, it comes with what it's supposed to be, but that doesn't mean it's 100% accurate. And you have to adjust the settings in your program to tell it what an inch is, you know, what these measurements equal these measurements. And so I kept having to go up and up and up. And I think it ended on the bed was supposed to be 11.89 inches for the lens. And I was at 13.1. So I had warped the shape that much to get it where my rules were printing 12 inches. On 12 inch stock, I was getting 12 inches of marks. Well, what had happened was I actually had pulled the corners out so far that there was a distortion on the top and bottom. So like a cavitation of a lens from corner to corner. And that cavitation, as I got closer to the ends of the ruler, were impacting the straightness of the lines. So the rulers are still marking 12 inches, but there is a slight bow in the where the laser was firing because I had this cavitation. So I spent 4 hours on Friday and the only thing I had was a piece of plywood. You're not supposed to use wood on a fiber laser. So I had a piece of plywood and a fire extinguisher. And I ran test after test after test after test. And I took a notebook and marked everyone. Like, these are the settings I ran. These were the results. These are the adjustments. These are the settings I ran. And I know the podcast can't see, but y'all can see, like,
these, oh, wow,
these were all the markings I had made. And, you know, these were the how I need to change. This is what came out. This is what, okay, I need to change trapezoidal. And I need to change, you know, the curvature on the left side and do all this until I got it to print out a square 12 by 12 inch file. So wow. I did that. When I tell you the first five rules I printed, or I etched, I printed on both sides because you would do one and there would be something off, so I'd have to flip it over to the other side. I ran 10, no mistakes.
Wow.
After I got the laser lined up, I did 10 straight, no mistakes. It marked even top and bottom. It was repetitive. I lined, like, here's my marks, set the material in, hit fire, ran perfect every time, 10 in a row. That worked beautifully. What did not work beautifully was the coppers. So I made a new file, Austin, for you without all the graduations, and I was going to make you a copper ruler, and I put the stock material in, and I could not get the fiber laser to mark on the copper. I tried every frequency from 25 up to 70. I tried different speeds. I tried to put it in the freezer first because I read somewhere if you make it cold, it'll work. I tried painting it. I tried doing Ceramark on it. I could get it to mark, but there was no recess. There was no, you know, impression. Mm. So as soon as I tried to polish it, the markings went away. So I can get it to mark and have, and it would probably stand up to hand use, but eventually it would wear off because it's not eating into the material. And so I don't know how to make it work because copper and brass are so similar, you know, metallurgy, you would think. I did get scared too, because the more I read, it said you have to be careful with copper. It's so reflective that you'll fire the laser back up and damage the galvo lenses inside your laser head. Mm-hmm. And I was standing over there next to it one time, just, you know, seeing how it's firing. And all of a sudden my forehead got super hot and it was the laser reflecting off, hitting me in the face. Yeah. It freaked me the fuck out. So if I miss say some things or, you know, I'm hyper aggressive, I know I've dropped 3 F bombs already. It's cause I fried my medulla oblongata with this fiber laser.
There you go.
That's crazy. I would think that the copper would, it's got a little bit lower melting temperature, so maybe that would affect it. I don't know. It's very weird.
So yeah, you would think like maybe it would disperse the heat more. I mean, it just did not bite. I tried sanding it and running it through. I tried, again, I put Ceramark all over it, tried running it through, could not get it. And I'm not done with it. I got all those blanks. I need to do something with them. And worst case, I'm just going to cut them in half and I'll do 6 inches in the CNC.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, just move it over to the Nomad and knock it out. Yeah.
My first ever Nomad project.
Yeah, that should be good.
Yeah. What about you folks? I know neither of you worked on your ornament, so what else you've been up to?
I'm still mulling over my idea on my ornament, but
what you're doing. You're going to wait till the week of and then make some bullshit out of barn wood and spray some clear coat on it.
Hey, that stocking that I made for you,
I have
had a story, and it was very intentional.
I've got it
about the Christy story behind and connection.
Out of the trash and write some Dolly Parton lyrics on the back of it.
It was not trash. That was legit barn wood.
No, it's a good ornament. You got to do. You can't do the same thing. You can't. You can still use barn wood, but it can't be a stocking again.
Oh no! And last year I did. I made a totally different ornament last year, and I used barn wood and leather. So,
what'd you make last year? I remember the stocking you made.
I made the little log cabon out of barn wood.
That's right.
And then I put the Christmas tree with all the different decorations on it. And then the little snowman, which was painted leather. First time I'd done that. And then I did a painted snow cap over the roof of the cabin. So don't throw me under the bus on that one. It's very involved ornament.
Austin, you did the marble in the basket?
the basket twist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know what I'm gonna do this year, because the first year I did machined that, then I did blacksmith. So maybe this year I'll do woodwork.
Well, for this thing, you just took a Harbor Freight step drill bit.
That's right.
Yeah. So
yeah. I think I might just throw some barn wood together and call it good.
I'm telling you guys.
For 50 bucks, I'll make your own.
Wait, you got any lead coated wood? Lead painted wood? I'll use that.
She definitely's got some lead painted wood.
No, I don't. I have no painted no painted old wood. We have those testers. I'm telling you, there's been multiple projects that folks have wanted me to do stuff with. And I whip out that Lowe's, the little testy strip thing, and do the test on it. Because I don't want to jack up my lungs.
Yeah, I have no desire to be alive at 90.
The test strip thing.
Yeah, I've had multiple. And I didn't realize, most folks don't realize that. Marvin just knows a lot about it, particularly because of his experience in remodeling construction. But okay, so I went back home, had a wonderful weekend. Deer season is, well, it'll be a week from by the time this episode comes out. So we had some prepping to do on the old deer condo that we refer to it as. And then, as always, there's other little projects for us to take care of back home. And my dad needed a couple new, he needed his belt that I made him a couple years ago. It needed to be adjusted smaller. So I trimmed off the end and added a couple more slots for him. So so I took tools and did that. And then, and then I went and surprised Katie's 23rd birthday was on Sunday. So Monday, I surprised her in Kansas City and had a good visit with her. But
yeah, I think you've been to more museums in the last two and a half years than I've been in my whole life.
We love art museums. I mean, that's just something the girls and I have really enjoyed going to see all over the country. I mean, that's kind of our go-to thing as far as like when we go on vacation. We're like, okay, what's the local museum or what do they have going on? And they had like a special exhibit with certain artists. And usually like the Kansas City Art Museum is free for the general gallery view of their things they have on display. But then they also have a like a special exhibit. So then you can pay extra and see the special, kind of the traveling show type pieces of art.
I remember when I was a kid, my dad took me to the Chrysler Art Museum here. And we were walking through, I was probably like 8 years old or 9 years old. And I was like, man, this guy is like a crazy artist, Dad. Like almost every one of them in here is done by him. He's like, who is it? And I was like, his name is Anonymous. And my dad was like dying laughing. He's like, you're a fucking idiot. He didn't actually say that, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, even when we were out in Albany, we spent the day and went to one of the local art museums there. So yeah. And those places, obviously I'm not an artist in the painting or any of those kind of world sketch. But man, to see some of the pieces that were done, and a lot of them have furniture or chairs or turned items. And it's just like, holy cow, you know, that's just such detail work. So yeah, that's a big draw for us. So yeah, that was the extent of my week.
Cool. Yeah. I've been eating a lot of candy. That's me. I've been doing the Halloween tags.
Y'all don't have trick-or-treaters in your street, huh?
No.
So this is all candy you're stealing from your kids?
Yeah, no, this is taxes.
I got you, taxes.
Yeah, yeah. So Halloween night here, like, poured rain. Oh. It was miserable. It was cold, like, you know, for Virginia, it was cold, like in the 40s. And it was just dumping rain. It was just miserable. And I was like, I'm taking at least 30%. Or maybe 40% for this, you know.
That dad tax is real.
Yeah. And I just started eating it on the car ride home. And they're like, are you eating my candy? I'm like, I'm eating my candy.
So we gave out candy. And the first kid that came up, I was like, take two. Because there hadn't been a lot of kids and we have all this candy. And he like perused through and took two packs of the peanut butter M&Ms. And so Kristen walked outside and I'm eating peanut butter M&Ms. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like these are the ones that are going to go first. So I need to get my share before the kids show up and take the rest.
Dude, peanut butter M&Ms are legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So much better than peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. The only thing I ever liked about peanut M&Ms was I liked trying to split just the chocolate shell off and keeping the peanut without breaking it.
Yeah. Okay.
I would try to do that.
To do that with a Kit Kat. Break the top layer off, the bottom layer off, work, you know, separate the layers as you eat a Kit Kat.
I like to do that with Oreos. I like to eat the cream out of the middle, put the cookies back in the fucking container because they're gross.
That's wrong at so many levels. So all you've been doing is eating candy. That's all you've been doing.
You want me to continue? I've been working. Let me talk about this for a second. Me and Brian House have teamed up and we're going to do some house-made high caliber craftsman scribes.
Okay.
That are going to go on his platform. He's doing like this collaboration network. I don't remember exactly what it's called. Yet.
Yeah.
So it's like Gnome Hammer Forge is doing some Reaper Manufacturing. He's doing some keychains.
It's like house brands.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So it's like other makers that are, we're all going in and kind of being like a conglomerate. And I told him, I was like, how about some scribes? And he's like, yeah, definitely. Let's do it. So I'm super pumped and that should be a cool thing.
How many are you making? I saw the reel today, all the brass you had cut.
Well, I'm doing 23, but that's to allow for some to go to the scrap bin.
Michael Jordan?
Necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, for Michael Jordan. Yeah. No matter what, I always make 23 or something.
And so
the Michael Jordan rule.
Those will be on sale on House's site, or are you going to drop ship, or how's that going to work?
We have not got that far yet, but
okay.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to do, cause we're both doing content and we're doing where you do the, I can't remember what it's called. No, that's like, you can tag him and it posts on his page and my page. I don't know
how it's called. Collaboration.
Collaboration. Okay. So we did that today. And he did one where he was making the hot stamp for me.
Because I saw him do that. I'm like, what the fuck? I could have made that for him.
Yeah. So because he's making his that goes right next to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that's the first time we did that. And I was like, man, this reel that I'm doing, like, it needs to be amped up. So I chose the song from Tenacious D where it's like, to be the best, you got to make it to the top of the mountain. You know, real jam. And
to be the best, you've got to beat the best. It's off of Rise of the Phoenix, maybe.
I think so.
Yeah.
But it's a short, it's like perfect for a reel. It's like the right length. And I was like, and it's a jam. So when I posted today, he's like, this is the best fucking reel I've ever seen. It's just like really like going for it. So
it's so funny because I watch most of y'all stuff while I'm at work. So it's on mute.
Right.
So I didn't get it, but I'll rewatch it. Maybe that'll be my song at Maker Camp next year.
I actually, you know what's hilarious? I played it for Jamie tonight because she was like, I don't know that Tenacious. Like she likes Tenacious D. And she's like, I've never heard the song. And I was like, for some reason, I can just see Dean singing this karaoke. Like I just like for some reason in my head, that's what I was thinking. Yeah,
they released that album Fly to the Phoenix or Rise of the Phoenix, and it's not that very good. But that song is good. There's two good songs on it, and that's one of them.
I like Tenacious D. So.
Yeah, me too. They're good live. If you have an opportunity to see them live, check them out.
We'd like to take a minute and thank the folks over on Patreon for the support that they give us. If you'd like to join them over there at patreon.com/makingyourwaypodcast. On the top tier, we've got Marion Ward from Creative Ward Gallery, Scott Oram from Daddy Yourself, and Ozark Spirit. Tonight, we're joined with Ashley Piper with Shallow Creek Woodcraft. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting you in person at Makers Camp, which was a great experience. And so we started talking about some of your projects that you make, and we wanted to dig into a few of your more recent woodworking projects. But can you kind of give us like a little rundown about your style and what type of making do you do?
So I consider myself a contemporary design furniture maker, I guess studio craft furniture, because I'm just a one-woman shop, and I design my own pieces and build from there.
Excellent. Well, I want to dig into the one that you have pinned on your Instagram right now at the top. It is, I think you refer to it as the Midnight Dance. Since we're just an audio format, can you kind of give everybody a rundown of what exactly does it look like?
Oh, wow. This is fun. without the visual, it's kind of neat to describe it. So it's a spalted maple case. It's a standing cabinet. So it's taller, long legs, and they're black. And the shape is kind of like a dainty ballerina leg into that kind of like slipper shaped foot. The rails and the sides have like a swooping, curving motion, like as if it was twisting on point. Same kind of ballerina motion idea. And the doors have that same swoop that carries up through them to bring that motion from the base through.
So is this a piece that that someone like commissioned that wanted you to specifically build it? Or was this one that you, for you and your idea as far as to come up with the design?
Yeah, it's all for myself with this one. Okay. Because I'm in a class. So we had some generalized guidelines of criteria that we had to follow, but really all the space design and just add those specs in there. So I just had to have knife hinges and be a cabinet. That was my only guidelines in that spec. So I just kind of went from there and ended up with my Midnight Dance cabinet.
How tall is it from like floor to very tip top?
Oh, 55 inches. I'm trying to remember. Okay. Offhand. I should have wrote it down.
Well, no, I mean, that's, I was just kind of a curious in proportion, because sometimes it's tricky to tell in, yes, photographs, you know, whether it's a 6 inch or a 60 inch. Yeah. But I was kind of assuming that it was of the taller version. So can you kind of walk us through the process as far as like what you were thinking or where you were inspired to, like, let's start with the top part, the cabinet part of it. How did that choice of material and design come about?
Well, I've had that spalted maple sitting up in my lumber racks for a few years now. I got it from a local sawyer, like 5 minutes from my house. It was this yard tree and I just loved it. It was just, you know, one of those things that you hoard and it's just special. And you're like, at some point I'm going to use this, I swear. And when I started kind of drawing things out, I just felt compelled to use it. I thought it needs to find a home and it's so loud and fun. I think it'll be great to work with. So I kind of just started with that. I kind of drug stuff out from the lumber racks and I love that it's from close to home and just seemed to be the right piece for the job.
Yeah, I'm notorious for doing that similar thing. Be like, oh, I want to save this for something special. And then no matter how many other great ideas come along, I'm like 10 years later, I'm still sitting with that piece on the shelf. So I applaud you for putting it into use because it really is a beautiful combination. Now on the inside, I'm assuming it's a double door opening.
Yes.
And how many, because I didn't see pictures of it open unless I missed that on your page.
No, I haven't done them yet. I honestly haven't brought it back up to photograph it again. Okay. So far it's shelves on, yeah, shelves on the inside. And then there's going to be a little drawer in the bottom corner. So I have that framing for the little drawer in there, but I just didn't do the drawer portion of it yet. But that's, so it's movable shelves. So because I thought it's neat to have like a little cubby to put small things in and then a space to move, because I love books. So I thought if you want to put a little book or tuck something in that's taller, then you can move the shelf to fit them in that other space.
Yeah, that is great. So then now let's cover like the connection with the legs, because it really, my daughter-in-law is a ballerina. And so this really does the whole midnight dance. I totally see it, especially with the bottom of the leg for the feet, because it definitely has, you know, ballerina on point. So where did that idea come from, or that inspiration to do that type of foot on the legs?
I really just started sketching and kind of making iterations and just sketching and kind of sketching. And I love like fine details that are still prominent. Just I like that visual play on space that things like that create. And I feel like the human body and the way that we move does that in so many interesting ways. And when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a ballerina, but I was always really rough and tumbly. So it's kind of this opposite contrast of like how I am as a person. And I think it just kind of naturally comes out through that expression with sketching and finding it. And I originally started with the leg being like a little wider and it just looked like, I don't know, too big and like bulbous looking and unbalanced. And I just made iterations of the leg and kind of kept shaping it down. And it just ended up catching to that point. And I was like, that's it. It's just where it needs to be.
And especially because like the front legs are shorter on the upper part than the back. I mean, I just think it all really flows really well together. And then even the color, because I think you mentioned that the actual wood for the legs is cherry, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
And what was the process as far as dyeing them? Because it looks, I mean, it's black now. So what was your process for dyeing cherry?
Well, I started out thinking I was going to leave it as cherry, but then I was really struggling with the visual, just wasn't there for me. And I thought with the spotted maple being so moody that it was just not the right choice. And so I started out by trying to ebonize some cherry, and it was turning this really kind of brownish color, and I just wasn't feeling it. And I did not want to gamble with missing that contrast. So mm-hmm. I started looking for other options and other dyes, and I tested different ones out. And I got to reading that India ink has shellac base in it.
Oh.
And so, yeah, I did a test swatch of that. And with that shellac base, it just builds a really nice finish that you can do a shellac over top of it because it'll solidify through and it'll give it a much better finish overall.
The foot that you have on that piece of furniture that Christy was asking you about, you've referenced like the ballet inspirations. Does that style foot have a name?
I haven't really named it at all yet. Not that I know of.
Yeah, you have another table that you have something similar, but then you go even more, like you exaggerate it even more. And what's really cool is your style is very traditional, you know, traditional joinery, you know, very clean lines, but you bring a whimsical into it. So this dresser, you know, you've got these traditional joinery corners and everything and really highlight the wood, but the framing has these curves to it. You have another project. It was a mirror frame that has this, you know, it's this real traditional kind of joinery, a classic, you know, mirror frame, but you've got this whimsical off-centric kind of look to it. Have you purposely been trying to bring that whimsy into what you're making?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what it is with that. I just feel like as I've been drawing more and figuring out more about design, I just keep getting pulled in that direction. And I just love that idea of motion. So I just been kind of playing with that iteration of it. And that's what I started with, that leg style on the bench. And I didn't have a lot of time because our deadlines are pretty high.
It's a ballet slipper. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Absolutely. I'm curious, you had mentioned the sketching things out. Have you always been someone who likes to draw or sketch things out? Because I can't even draw a stick figure. I mean, my stick figures are curvy. So I'm like, is there any hope for me to ever be able to draw out projects?
Absolutely.
I didn't know if that was something you have always done or if that's something you just kind of grown as you've been learning in your woodworking.
Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of doodled and sketched, I think, as a person, but I never, ever thought I was good at it. I mean, flat out, I was not. Like, I suck at this. It's terrible. So, I mean, even sometimes now, like, I mean, when I scratch something out, I just think the expectations, right? Like, if I know what I'm looking at, that's really what matters the most. I think it gets tricky when you try to translate that out to clients and things like that. So it's a good push to try to do it. But we actually kind of get forced even through the program to draw more and to rely on it a little bit more. And there's a book, I'll have to send it to you if you like books, but it's called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. And it's really just realizing your perspective on drawing is really what's holding you back. And once you start looking at things almost like flipped, it's crazy how much more simple it becomes. And your drawing really improves. It's wild.
I think we should start the Ashley Piper Library in our Patreon. And it's just books that Ashley recommends.
Bibliography.
Yeah,
there's a few books in your collection that I have, and now I'm like, they're on the shelf over there, and I'm like, I need to dig into them a little more, especially before I start, you know, the next project or whatever. So
yeah, it's just a nice resource.
Good inspiration.
Where I feel like I don't have to hunt as hard through like a bunch of bullshit that's online. Like sometimes I don't need a video. Sometimes I do, but I'll have a better question sometimes to look for something visual if that's what I need. But so many of the books have illustrations and things in them or a really like bullet pointed answer to something. And it's like, it just cuts out so much other shit. And my brain just hones in on that so much better. It just gets all the noise away.
That's cool. So as far as the I'd like to kind of dig into the class that you're taking. What was, was that just like a one specific project class, or is that something you're going through like more of a long-term class type situation?
Yeah, I'm in a 2-year program. It's actually an online furniture mastery program with Northwest Woodworking Studio. Done by Gary Rogowski, and he is very inventive. He's always taught classes, and he does lots of other articles, and he's well published and really beautiful furniture. And so he used to teach the class, but then when the pandemic happened and he was trying to pivot and find ways to reach us, he ended up doing this online program that I found. And so we're the, I don't know if we're the second or third class, but it's a 2-year program. So we had the first year ended and we just started the second year here just a couple weeks ago. And so we do a series of projects throughout the year. And we also do like bench projects that we just do technique focused things and lecture time.
So as far as like some of the projects, how, like, where do you start in the first year of that program? What kind of projects do you kind of go through as you're learning the different techniques?
So the first one he starts us out with is his sushi box. It's hand cut lap joints and I think it's lap joints. I feel like my brain's failing me all of a sudden. We do hand work with that. So we do the sushi box because boxes are notoriously hard to design. You mm-hmm. would think, oh, it's so this small, it's just a little box. But when you really want to start changing elements of it and translating out ideas and like having things be cohesive, it actually gets way harder than you think. So we start with that to start flexing our design brain and realizing we're all really terrible at it and where we need to work on things. And oh man, what was next? We did a dovetail box. We do like a table or a bench. We do tools. That's part of how I did some of the hand plane stuff that I've done. What else did we do last year? Oh, a mirror frame. We did a mirror frame also. And it's all really a big focus on design. So each piece is really just taking what appears to be a simple project, putting in those techniques that we're also learning, but mostly emphasizing your own style and kind of just stretch those skills.
I'd like to talk about, since you talked about the planes, some of the tools that you've been making. Can you kind of walk us through setting up? I know you've done several different styles. Maybe what is the setup for making it and how you're getting them going?
I guess I would describe them as like a Krenov style plane, like James Krenov, the furniture maker. He's a great resource that I've looked into because it is simplified. Wooden planes, like wooden bodied planes, are simplified. They're accessible. They're easy to make. And you can always buy an iron for them if you don't feel comfortable with an iron. So it's a nice way to like start to get your feet wet without having to really work with metal if you're not very familiar with it. Let me think. The first one that I did was a high angle plane, which was fun because it's kind of a specialty tool. It's not something you always need, but I just used a scrap bin piece of oak. It was like a dollar for this little hunk of wood. And so you just kind of map out that it's the right size that you need. And then it's really just cutting off the sides and having a center blank and creating that angle on the inside of wherever the iron's going to rest, whatever angle that may be. So for like the high angle, it could be 55 or 60 degrees. It could be whatever you really want for the work that you're doing.
So are you drawing these up in like Fusion or how are you figuring out like all the interior angles and what it looks like blown apart?
By hand. I just kind of okay. I sketched it out and I just use a rule and angle finder and just kind of go from there. I wish I was good at Fusion. Yeah, that's both. Where I struggle. That tech side is so much harder for me than sketching that out and even kind of mathing things a little bit more. It feels more simple to me.
Sure. So I noticed you were talking about heat treating the blade. What was that experience like?
I felt really stupid at first. I was like, what in the heck is going on? Like, I'm like waiting. I had like this paper chart printed out next to me. And I'm like, okay, these are the colors I need to look for as I'm heating up this metal. It was really fly by night. I used a torch. I used map gas and heated, and I quenched in like vegetable oil, and I used my oven upstairs, much to my poor family's to temper the blade. So it worked out fine. It's a usable, workable plane. Is it the prettiest piece of metal you'll ever see? Definitely not, but it's functional.
That's cool. What is the blade made out of?
It's O1 tool steel.
O1. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. O1 is sometimes tricky to heat treat. So that's cool that you're able to get it nice and hard. So then the second one you made was a radius plane, correct?
Yes.
What was that? Is like the craziest looking. I'm not a woodworker. So to me, I was looking at that. I'm like, what kind of wood is that thing?
It's a pink ivory. It's an exotic. Oh. I don't use them very often, but the lumberyard that I go to, I had seen this piece sitting up on one of the shelves for a long time. I mean, like years. I had walked by and I always look at it like, man, who's going to buy that? At some point, it's not going to be here. It was like, I felt like I was visiting it up there in like the octagon. Like, oh, hello, pink ivory. And it's coated in wax. So it's like, it's dirty looking. And I'm like, it has to be something pretty good under there. And everyone keeps walking by it. And then we had to build the plane for class. And I was like, that pink ivory's there. It is mine. So even when I was buying it, the guy there laughed at me. He's like, oh, you're the one who finally bought this thing.
That's funny.
Forever. It's absolutely beautiful underneath.
Was it similar to working normal black ivory, or?
I don't know. I've never worked with black ivory, honestly.
Okay. It's very beautiful. And it looks like, so with this one, it looks a little different. It looks like you used one block and kind of maintained the grain and everything in the same, like, it almost looks like it's all made out of one piece. Is that how this one is constructed versus the other one with sides?
No, this one is 1, 2, 3, 4. That one's four pieces also. I really took my time with that grain match, because you want, when you cut the sides off of that blank, like I did it on the bandsaw, so you don't lose a whole lot of kerf involved in that, which is nice for a grain match. So it's probably why it also lines up very well.
Yeah, looking at the videos on Instagram, it looks like it was all carved out of a single block. So it's very, very cool. Good job on that one. I like it.
Thanks.
And then, so these planes, I'm obviously not, this is not my realm. There's no knobs. There's no adjustment. What's the deal with these? Like, how do you make it cut and make it deeper, make it shallower?
With a little plane adjusting hammer. So it sounds like opposite of what you think you should do, but it's taps, tap on the back or tap on the wedge. You can tap on the sides, and it moves the blade and the wedge inside of there just enough so you can adjust it. And some of that gets figured out in the beginning when you're setting up your angle and you're making sure like the mouth on the bottom of the plane isn't too large or too small. And that can help too with how much that blade protrudes out of the bottom.
So are you just going all the way through the process and hoping for good results at the end? Or are you like mock it, like clamping it together and doing like a test run?
Yeah, I'm too careful of a person. I can't like have the unknown looming there on
the project, no doubt,
like that. But yeah, I definitely clamped it up and made sure, because when you put the pin in across that holds the pressure on the blade, you need to know where that is in relation to the mouth. Because if that is not in the right location, the plane isn't going to work as effectively. Like you'll get chatter in the blade, or it just, things will be not in the right places. It just doesn't function as well.
Yeah. All right. I jotted down, make sure you design it correctly. And number two, use witchcraft to adjust the blade.
Perfect. It sounds about right. It's definitely a process you have to get used to, because when you first start, it's like you're not taking any shavings, and then you tap the back, and then all of a sudden you're like gouging something out, and you're like, I didn't even do anything to this.
Well, Ashley, listening to you talk, I'm thinking I need to go to woodworking school, because you have all the answers to the questions. I wanted to talk about another project you did about a little over a year ago, and it was a watch box that you made. What wood did you use for that?
I think it's Wenge or Wenge.
Sure. Yeah. And I don't know how to say it either.
Yeah. I don't know.
why choose that wood?
It was actually a commission. I had a friend who went to the lumberyard with me, and we walked through and looked at different options that were there. And she really just liked the character, that it was really naturally so deep in color.
And I guess that was before you had learned that you could just India ink some easy working cherry. That wing is kind of hard to handle, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. Splintery for sure, but it finishes out so very nice if it doesn't splinter. So that finish is something to chase for sure.
So you've got a watch box here. You did everything, including the little pillows inside?
Yes.
What was the process for those? Because I'm all about the sewing lately.
So I just have a little sewing machine that I've always just kind of done, I don't know, like upholstery type things or like heavy duty curtains, like nothing like that you can wear, just all other kinds of things. And so when it came to the watch box and looking for little pillows, I really wanted something that was going to match the liner of the watch box, and I couldn't find anything. So I thought, well, I'll just try making some of the pillows out of there. So it's a goatskin leather. So it's softer.
Oh, wow. Very soft. Yeah.
Yeah. It's softer. It's not very thick. It's just thick enough to have body to it, but not be so unworkable that I can't really sew it with my kind of sewing machine.
Was this preschool or was this before you went to school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how did you come up with the design and the layout for this box?
I wish I remembered.
It's got the six spots with the pillows for watches to sit. Then you have a tray on the side for one that can lay flat for, you know, any other horologists out there. I'm just curious, you know, why the six, why the one? Was that part of the commission, or is this just how it worked out for you?
I think it's mostly how it worked out. We did start out with quantity as far as how many watches were in mind and what we wanted to do and if we wanted space to grow or anything like that. And I just really thought it was nice to have a little bit bigger of a box and a space. Like if there was a watch that you wear frequently, you can just pick it up and put it on and you don't have to go through the whole process of taking it off that pillow and, you know, fussing too much. It's just a simple, like, end of the day, put my watch down in this spot and keep it going.
Was this one of the first times that you cut the top off of a box?
No, I don't think so.
But with working with something like Wingate, what was that, you know, how many times did your heart stop cutting the top off this box that you had made?
Mostly because the glass is already in there after glue up. Yeah. That was probably the most nerve-wracking part. So I gambled with aloe bics. I wanted to have glass in there. I thought it was the right aesthetic. And so just taping that up. And I put cardboard and like reinforced everything just to be careful. But that was probably the only part I was really worried about. I was less worried about the Wenge doing something weird as I was, like the glass breaking, because that was not so easy of a fix in comparison.
Then do my eyes deceive me, or is this some more of that spalted maple at the bottom? Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like you book matched two pieces to do the bottom. Was that done on the bandsaw?
Yes.
I've never done that process before. Yeah, what was that like?
You have to be patient. Definitely take your time. Not expect the bandsaw to go like super fast through anything. I think slow and steady and patient and making sure it's tuned up well. A bigger blade definitely works in your benefit. As long as it's tracking well, it cuts through nice and clean.
That's awesome. No, it's a beautiful project. And I want to go from there into a little segment we call This or That, where I give you some options and see what you think. Something interesting about you is that you are in woodworking school, you know, as an adult, you've decided to take this path. But I know that you also are a big proponent of woodworking books and literature like that. So first, I want to start with, what do you think you've learned the most from school or books?
Ooh. Now I'd have to say books.
Cool. And I'm glad you said that, because you have a whole real highlight on woodworking books, some of the ones that you've really liked. It was impressive to see how many you've gone through. I buy a lot of them. They never get open. They just go on the shelf. So what if you were to recommend just two or three or even one, you know, what's kind of your go-to, the ones that you really are glad that you opened the spines on?
I'm probably the worst person to ask this question of. Like, I'm super book nerd, but I go back to each different books for whatever the subject matter is, whatever the need is. If I have a question, I go for like specific books, like whether it's a joinery question or a design question or a specific style that another maker makes. And I go for that just to look for one piece. So it's hard for me to narrow it down to just one.
Being that you do have a traditional woodworking style with some real traditional joinery, I think that's what the school's teaching. Do you enjoy using the manual tools or power tools?
I definitely love hand tools. I like the control and the quiet. And I like that usually it's the ends of the project or things that hold it together that have the biggest influence from those.
What a great answer. What's your favorite wood to work with?
Ash.
Ash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was not ready for that.
No, I'm like, we didn't have a single project that Ash
was on.
I
didn't even see any on the page.
Of all the vintage tools that you've collected, do you like any more than your Lady Leg calipers?
Ooh, I guess so. I'd have to say I really like, I have a 3-inch set of dividers. I think they're one of my favorite little tools.
All right, since you're talking about old tools, I've got to ask you about this, the Emmert pattern, the turtleback, vice. What's the deal with that? I see you said it was missing some parts, but where'd you find it?
I actually found it on Facebook Marketplace. So I have a bad addiction that we're looking for old tools.
Yeah,
so <same. laughs> I'm constantly like surfing. I think it's partially curiosity and like finding things. But yeah, I was like kind of just looking at vice options because my workbench situation isn't spectacular. And I was thinking if I do parts of it and have some ideas about what I want for a vice, that'll help me decide on what I want as far as a bench build, trying to knock out my indecisiveness by picking the things that I really like. So yeah, I just kind of landed on it on Marketplace.
I think so cool. It's one of the fully positional, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Very cool. You can twist it around, up, tilt, up, down. That's actually the part I'm missing is the tilt lever.
Cool. It looks like you're missing the tightening handle too. So if you need a machinist to knock one out for you.
Yeah, now I know somebody. Excellent.
Yeah. We can do something. All right. So since we're talking about tools, I'd like to just walk right into the three tools question. So if you were going to start your workshop from scratch, what would be the first three tools that you would acquire to start doing your woodworking?
I would buy a nice set of chisels and not worry about messing them up. That would be my first tool. My second, I'd get a bandsaw because they're so versatile. I think you can do so many different operations on there and jigs and angles and things that, and it's less intimidating than a table saw. And then third, I'd probably go with a Lee Nielsen, like 102, my small block plane.
Okay.
Nice. Cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And if you would, please tell everybody where they can find you.
Shallow Creek Woodcraft on Instagram, TikTok, and my website.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Well, we really appreciate it and hope you have a great night.
Thanks. You guys too.
You
Thanks.
Too. Thank you so much.
Good night. We'd like to say a special thanks for the folks over on Patreon in the middle tier. We've got Tony Langer from Langer Works, Susan Duplantis from Hearth and Garden Art, Stephanie Taddeo, and Kyle with Footwork Woodworking.
Austin and Christy, talking to Ashley, one thing I really took away, if you look at her Instagram, go scroll back on her page, go back 100 weeks, 2 years, and look at the stuff she's doing, and then look at the stuff she's doing now. And the development has just been through the roof. I wanted to ask her this, but I was scared how it was going to come out my mouth with her on the phone. Do you think that this stuff was learned or released from deep inside? And I want to take that to us. Like when we develop these skills, when we develop our craft and the projects that we make, are these things we've learned via YouTube, books, hands-on? What's our favorite types of learning? Or do you think these were things that were kind of inside you and just come out? And I'll go first so that y'all can kind of think of a response. A lot of times I do think it's things that are just inside of me because there are projects that I go to do. Like I just did this chocolate cake thing for Haunted House Baking,
right?
And I suck at it. And I don't know how much effort I like classes and teaching. I don't know that I would get any better because it's not what is in me. But then there are times where I'm working with a piece of wood and I just see it from this block of wood. I see what the final shape's going to be, how I'm going to get there. And it kind of comes out of what I'm, the process I'm working at. Outside of that, I don't know that I learn a whole lot in YouTube. I can do the follow along, you know, hey, step one, step two, and I can get that kind of stuff from YouTube. But anything else, it's definitely just straight hands-on learning from mistakes. I was always like that. Even in band, you know, I'd have a sheet of music in front of me, but until I heard it, it didn't mean anything. And it's right. Just like that in the shop. Like, I'll have the mill. I could watch a YouTube video or the lathe, not know what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'll see my father-in-law do it once. And I'm like, okay, I understand how to make these bevels. Or so throwing that back to you guys, do you think that the crafts that we have, are these learned from, you know, some books or YouTube or lessons, or is this something that's just kind of in us and finds a way out?
I don't know that it's in me and finding its way out. And I'd asked her the question about drawing, you know, because she had said she sketches everything. Mm-hmm. And because I, you know, I'm totally sucky at that, I do appreciate her response in that it only has to make sense to me. And I mean, that's almost like weirdly liberating. I'm like, that's so right. You know, it only has to make sense to me as far as helping me do whatever it is I'm going to do. As far as whether I've got some, you know, guttural skill deep inside of me, I don't know that that's, I never thought about it that way.
You don't think your ancestors are passing down like some dairy maid skills or?
No.
Yeah. Christy stops putting on the Miracle Whip when her ancestors say stop.
Hey, I've been using some Duke's mayonnaise lately, so that's enough on the Miracle Whip bashing. Okay. but I guess because I feel like I have to look at a cheat sheet for everything when it comes to woodworking or metalworking or whatever. I have to see, I have to read, I have to look, I have to understand, I have to look at Pinterest to get an inspiration or YouTube for an inspiration or whatever, or I have to just overly analyze the function of things. Because for me, 95% of my direction on a project, the core source, most important part is its functionality.
Yeah.
You know, the beautiful feet on the bottom of that cabinet that she made and just the swooshy waves and stuff.
I'm telling you right now, that comes from inside of you.
Yeah, that's not in a textbook. I agree.
That comes from inside of you.
I just don't think I've got it.
So when I look at her page, before we even started this discussion, I was like, this gal is an artist that found woodworking because... Yes. When you look at the cabinet that we were talking about, it's mm-hmm. a total juxtaposition. It's a square cabinet, and then the bottom is all fluid French curves and things. And I'm like, that is to make you feel a certain way. Like, this is cold and blocky, but has the crazy grain. And then she cut in the yin-yang curved doors, you know. And then she is operating on designer woodwork, yes. Not function woodwork.
Yeah.
And that's where I think you're getting hung up, Christy, is like your part that you're saying it's not in you is because you're so concerned with function. She mm-hmm. is obviously concerned with function, but the aesthetic, the way it makes you feel when you look at it, that's an artist approach and a creative, you know, as a creative yeah. approach. And I find myself, I tend to go more towards functionality, but I tried to push to be more creative than I am, you know, like I'm trying to be more creative. I'm jealous of people who have that natural creativity coming out of them.
You know, I'm in that, I have a similar struggle in that I struggle to commit the time it takes to be creative because right. There's so many things. Like if I'm going to make a jig, I'm gluing this piece of scrap wood to that piece of scrap wood to this, you know, metrics that I need. And running with it. And I look at it later and I'm like, why did I make that so ugly? Like I could have taken my time and made this a project. This jig could have, and I was thinking about like her hand planes and stuff. Like
right.
She went and bought pink ivory wood and everything. And I know it was a school project or whatnot, but those are the things I'm not doing. You know, if I'm setting up something to just serve a function, I don't put any kind of emotion or art into it at all. And honestly, I think a lot of my creativity comes from covering mistakes. My Santa sack for the ornament swap, I have white piping on the top and the bottom. The reason I have white piping on the bottom is because I cut the circle and then I wanted to score a line and I scored it too small. And instead of placing another piece, I scored it in the right place. And then I covered that score line with white piping and it looks fine. The bag looks fine. It's functional. It's not going to be a problem, but that creative touch came from fixing a problem. And that's how a lot of my stuff is. A lot of the neatest things that I do are because I'm fixing a fuck up.
No doubt. Me too.
Think about the projects that you've done and what's the one thing that you just, that just comes to mind. Just go, wow, that came from really deep inside. And what's one thing that you're like, I learned that skill from a resource or something else. I'll go first. I'm going to talk about my car. I'm about to do a bunch of car projects. So that's what I'm kind of working on. The one thing that when I look at, I'm like, wow, that came from deep inside the center console. I wanted to go for this open feeling. My car was from the 80s. 80s was when you got all the technology and gadgets and they filled every crevice up. I wanted to go for open top, open floor, just clean. And I brought the center console in here and took a Sawzall and I cut it and cut the top off of it, rewrapped it in leather and all of that. I rebondoed it to make it. But all that came from just, this was, I knew inside that this is what it needed to look like. And that was the path I was going to go with it. And then sticking, you know, in the car, the thing that I learned was I recovered the door panels. And growing up, you know, my mom and dad would do upholstery stuff all the time. And so just understanding how to manipulate the vinyl around the corners and doing the stapling and getting, that was a skill that I, you know, I learned that working with them, doing it time and time again. And that's how I understand, you know, you've got the hole you need to cut for a speaker where you don't cut a circle, you cut the slit so that you can fold and pull back and get the tight seams. Those were all skills that I picked up just in practice and watching them do it. So those are kind of two things that just jump out. And it doesn't have to be the number one, just two things that kind of jump out to you. So whoever wants to go.
I think one of the things, one of the projects that is a little more creative, I guess, was the epoxy Lazy Susan that I did for my mom. And that's probably been, that was back in 2020. It's a good size Lazy Susan. And it was a combination of four triangles of some walnut that we had milled. And I wanted to do a little power carving to kind of give it that lake effect in the middle and then layer up the different shades of blue for the epoxy. But then, and so then also the four seams where all of the four pieces were going together, they had like a little river of epoxy too. And I mean, I think that was probably one of my more creative projects, but it very much was function. And I just gave it a pretty color when I did that one in particular. Okay. I learned a lot because that was one of my very first epoxy projects. And I wish I would have done that about 2 years later after we had some of our podcast guests on here that are experts in epoxy, because I could have saved myself a lot of headache with fighting with it. But now it's, I'm like, oh yeah, now epoxy, no big deal on those projects, because I learned a lot of hard lessons on that one of those first ones. But yeah, that's probably one of them that come to mind as far as more of a creative side.
What about you, Austin?
I'm struggling, you know, my mind goes back to boards, of course, because that's
let's do it.
Where I was being most creative. Like when I would do theme boards, this was like during the time of like Orange County Choppers when they were doing like all their theme motorcycles and stuff. So we actually would have people come in the shop and they would have that same. They're like, I want a theme. I want it to be like a World War II fighter plane.
Yep.
And so I was like, okay, like how can we do this? Let's get the shark, you know, the shark mouth on there. And then let's cast a bullet in the tail block of the board. And, you know, it was a lot of like figuring stuff out, or like, oh, I want a spider web theme. So we're like scroll saw a piece of walnut and the fin of the board was a spider web that has clear resin fill. So like I did a ton of those, and that was probably the most creative, because I was like, okay, how do we get all these elements into a board and then it make it look good. Like it looks good standalone, but then when you tell them about the theme, it makes a lot of sense, you know? So that would be like where I was probably most creative was during that time. With machining, it's like, it's not as easy to be creative, you know? And a lot of things that I make now, I'm doing it from inspiration. So like the leather balls, I'm making them the way that I like them to look after some of the other leather handle balls and stuff like that. So, now I'm more likely to take inspiration from somebody now versus back then. Back then there was nobody doing the kind of work I was doing. So it was like, you aren't going to find inspiration. Like I was charting my own path kind of.
What was cool about both those examples was whenever they, you know, crash and rash and tear the boards up and bring them to you broken, you'd be like, it's still spiderweb, but after you swept it off the porch, or yeah, it's still a World War II bomber after it was shot down and crashed in the water.
Right. No doubt. There's a couple of those boards I'd like to have now. Cause just, of course I would probably look at them now and be like, damn, those sucked. Like,
My mom sent me a picture of the restaurant in Mexico. They had surfboards on the wall. And she was like, does Austin have any boards that I could buy to do this? And I was like, I don't think you can afford Austin's boards to hang on the wall.
No, not anymore.
To cut a hole in and put a mirror in.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like this episode, please give us a review and subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on Instagram at Making Our Way Podcast or on Patreon. You can find all of our latest individual content on Instagram or YouTube. I'm at High Caliber Craftsman. Dean is at Dean_Duplantis, and Christy is at Twisted Twine Woodworking. Lick it, stick it, see you later, bye.
And we'd like to take a minute and thank the folks over on our first tier of Patreon. We've got Jacob with Griffin Makes, Jacob from Other Dog Design, Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concept, Justin from Bear Maked, Jeff Stein, a weird guy, Dave Bauer, Caitlin Landerno, Morley Kurt, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, Brendan McDonough from McDonough Design, The Grant Alexander, Jen Griffin the Black Sheep, Brian from Moonshine Leatherworks, The Makeshift Podcast, Maritime Knife Supply, Henry at HT1 Metalworks, Brad Harrison from Brad's Customs, Steve Delaney from One Old School Pirate, Kelsey Watson, Dan with Goofballs by Dan, Chris Powell from Full Steam Design, Spaghetti and Waffles, Rebecca Johansson, Ira Housework, Eric from Overall Makerworks, Ed Johns from ButtJoints.com, Dave Beckwith, Rob DeMarco, Dave at Atomic Airship, Earl the Third XYZ, and Dana and Emmett at Rescue Room on Summit. Thanks a bunch, folks.